There are those who claim that the first word, or one of the first words in the women's siddur, is a mistake. First word in the Maggid is moda ani, and if you look in a Sephardic siddur, it says nashim omrot moda, or moda ani, right? Because that's actually correct Hebrew for a woman should say moda, not moda. I think they asked the shayla. Someone told him to write moda. I don't know why. But this, probably one of their biggest mistakes, which they've corrected since, is in this, in the parsha, where it says that it says you can't eat a fish unless it has a snapper of a kaskeses, right? Kasha yesh a snapper of a kaskeses tochelu. If it doesn't have snapper of a kaskeses lo tochelu, how would you translate snapper of a kaskeses? How do you translate the words?
Fins and scales.
Fins and scales, right? So look at this. This is actually photocopies of, or they're not such great photocopies, but this, the top picture is from the first print of the Ar Scroll Chumash, the stone edition, 93. You see the last three lines? It says, you may eat of anything that is in the water. Anything that has fins or scales, you may eat.
Oh, no, so anything
does not have fins or scales, you shall not eat. So Ar Scroll is paskening over here that if it has either fins or scales, it's kosher.
Fins or scales.
Yeah. Now, to a certain extent, they're right. There's a Gemara Chulin that says,
if it has scales, it has fins.
Yeah. Kol sheyesh lo snapir.
But not the
other way around. If it has fins, right, it's not kosher unless it also has scales. So it's really a mistake here. Snapir of a kaskeses should have been translated as fins and scales. Now, how would you translate the next one? It says, "V'chasha ein lo snapper v'kaskeses lo techeva." Right? Really? What is it? What? Should he write if it doesn't have fins and scales, or should he write if it doesn't have fins or scales? Really, if it's missing one of them, it's already treif. If it has fins without scales, it's treif, or scales without fins. Except that the Gemara says there's no such example, right? And so what happened in the second picture, which is from 94, right? They changed it. Look what it says. It says they changed it from anything that has fins or scales. It says now anything that has fins and scales, you may eat. But then the second one that says anything that does not have fins or scales, you should not eat. Which I think that's accurate. In the next edition, the current one, it says, that's the bottom one, that's from 2005. Anything that has fins and scales, you may eat. And anything that does not have fins and scales, you should not eat. So they went through three different iterations.
Has it changed?
So the first print says or for both of them.
Right.
The second print has and for the first and or for the second. Oh. And the third time, they changed them both to and.
Okay.
So I actually was looking through this, and I emailed them. I emailed them in 2014 to ask what... I understand why they changed from the first one, because to say if it has fins or scales, it's kosher. That's no good. Okay. But what were they trying to figure out about the second one? When it says if it doesn't have fins or scales, you can't eat it. Why didn't they leave it alone? Why did they change it to fins and scales? So they kind of never really answered me on that. I think they just said, we're not sure what you mean. We don't see any changes for some reason. Anyway, so they kind of left it. But what this really points to an interesting question in general, which is, how do you translate the prefix vav? What is vav?
Connector.
Right. So should it be and or?
And,
right? Not only that, actually the word
oi,
vav...
I would mean.
Oh, exactly. The word I in Hebrew means or. Yeah? Vav. The word vav literally means hook. It's a hook. It's a conjunction. It's and. Yeah? So it really leaves open the question, how come sometimes a vav means and sometimes it seems to mean or? So two questions. Why should a vav ever mean or? And second question is, why should there be two expressions in Hebrew for or? One is the Vav and one is Aleph Vav. Why is that?
Aleph.
Oi. Right?
Yeah.
So, I saw years ago in the Malbin, I didn't bring a copy of it. I wasn't sure who would be here tonight. It's how deep you can go depends on who comes. Huh? Malbin in Sefer Vayikra makes an interesting point. He says that really, or can have two meanings. He gives a couple of examples. He says, let's say, the hakerev ha'krayim yirchatz b'mayim. Right? So there, clearly it means both. It doesn't mean pick which one. Right? On the other hand, he says, when it says, l'yachbol rechayim v'rochev, right, where it says you're not allowed to take as collateral for a loan, to foreclose on, a upper millstone or a lower millstone. It doesn't mean
both.
Only both. It means you can't take either one. Right? You take either one. Or I would give maybe a contemporary example. If I tell my child, I want you to eat something healthy. You can have the chicken or you can have avocado. So I said or. If he wants both, he can have both. He can have both. It's not exclusive. But if I tell him for dessert, you can have ice cream, you can have a cookie, he has to pick. It's not both. So he explains that really, and in English you have a similar thing. There's a concept of, in computer science is used a lot, of an exclusive or. Familiar with that idea? In logic, in Boolean logic, you have that. Sometimes or means only one or not the other. And sometimes or means either one. Right, there's a famous example that's given sometimes in linguistic studies. I don't remember the source of it. Somebody's applying for a job, and they ask him, have you ever been convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony? So he writes, no. So they do a background check, and they find out this guy has a huge record. So he says, why did you write no? So he says, I wasn't convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony. I was convicted of a misdemeanor and a felony. Right? Now clearly they meant either one of them, right? But strictly speaking, if it's an exclusive or, then he's right. Exclusive or, the condition is only fulfilled if it's one or not the other. It's, concept is used very heavily in modern cryptography and things like that. So what the Malbim says is that really a vav is a conjunction. Really a vav means and. In general, he says, when something's a positive, it's telling you positively to do something, so it means do this and do that. But when it's saying not to do something, like lo yachbo rechayim v'rochev, it means don't do this and don't do that. So it really still is an and. So he says that's an inclusive or. When it uses the word ay, when it means means exclusive, I'll give you an example. Ish aishaki yafli lindar neder. Man, if a man or a woman, right? There, every time somebody makes a nazirus, it's either a man or a woman. It's never both, right? So it's either a man or. So he says oi is real is really or, vav really is and, but when combined with, especially when combined with not, it means don't do it. So getting back to so he says it about a different case, but I'll apply it here. He says, if it would say, right, that would mean, if it either doesn't have fins, but it has scales, or it doesn't have scales, but it has fins, then it's treif. But if it doesn't have both, it would be kosher. That would be like that case where the guy says he was convicted of a misdemeanor and a felony. So he says it can't say here, oi. I'm paraphrasing. He says it about a couple of other cases. Can't say here, oi. It has to say ve. And now, how to translate it? To translate in English, I'm really not sure what the correct thing is. We have to ask some experts in English. Is it better to write and? Is it better to write or? I don't know. I really don't know.
Might work, I write or.
You write or?
Like a judge will say, claimant can't climb ladders, ropes, and scaffolds, but I change it to or, it means it can't do any of them.
Oh, interesting. Like that's like a disability ladder, right?
Yeah.
Ladders, ropes, and scaffolds. Because if you're right, he can't climb ladders, ropes, and scaffolds. It'll be mashma. If he has to climb all of them, it's a problem. Just leave one out. Right. That's mamish this question. But I really wanted to know, and I think there is a record somewhere of what exactly made our scroll switch from one to the other. The first thing they did was clearly a mistake, right? When you say it is kosher if it has either or, that's a problem. But I just don't know. Whoever I wrote to, I know they have records. They have logging of who changed what and why. But I guess whoever I emailed in 2014 wasn't interested. I emailed them. They said, we don't know what you're talking about. Regards to your dad. So I wrote back, I'm happy to send regards, but I don't know who this is. Because it just said, you know, like corrections at Art Scroll. So in like 2019, like 5 years later, they said, well, we did answer your email. So I still don't know who you are. You didn't answer my email. I think they lost interest at that point. I'm not really sure. But I gave them a follow-up. This, I don't know if this is their second biggest mistake, but I just wanted, I thought you'd find this amusing.
So Rashi said the Shesu is a separate animal.
Yes.
Here it just says completely separated split hoof.
Yes.
It does. Yeah. There's a big machlokes how it translates Shesu. This is not like Rashi.
It's very, very hard to understand that.
Yeah.
Because the word Shesu was used a few different times.
A few different ways. It's very it's deceptive, right?
Yeah. So how do you translate it?
It's machlokes in the Rishayim, I think.
Huh?
It's machlokes in the Rishayim. So I'm curious what the Art Scroll Rashi says.
How does he translate it? It's on this page?
Yeah. Seven. It's completely separated split off.
One second. Camel, the hair, and... Oh, it's cut out. So there's
sorry,
only
cut
three.
It out.
Now, because Rashi says the reason it's repeated is to add the Shesua.
Yeah, exactly. According
to the other Pshat, why is
right,
it repeated?
So this commentary is not going with Rashi. The translation is not going with Rashi. I'm sure on the Rashi Chumash, it's done differently. I noticed another thing which I sent to them, which is that in the Tisha B'Av, you know they have a slim volume for Tisha B'Av. So, never saw? Art Scroll has, not the Kinnis. They have a series like on Chagim and events. Never saw it? Just the Tisha B'Av. Has Eicha, but it does not have Kinnis. So they had in the back a supplement for Tu B'Av. They have it in Aguda. So I just want to read to you. They have an introduction to the... Tell me when you see the thing that's strange. It says, the 15th of day of Av has a long history of association with life, unity of the nation, the building of new homes in Israel, and hope for a brighter future. After the somber days of the 3 weeks between... 17th and times of the 9th of Av, weeks when Jews recall episodes of downfall and travail, of destruction, dispersal, of dashed hopes and dismal futures, comes Tu B'Av, with its promise of better times ahead. The following sections of this volume will set forth the history of the day and the significance of the many events it commemorates, all of them alluding to the confluence of themes that are aptly and beautifully symbolized by the marriage of David Rosenblum and Leo Rozek. And then it goes on. The Talmud describes. That's what it says. You open up. You get Maya Art Scroll Tisha B'Av. Go to the back. Tu B'Av. It says that the Tu B'Av is a very important thing, and it's aptly, beautifully symbolized in the marriage of David Rosenblum and the Orzeh. Trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah. No, I know what happened. I'll tell you what happened. It also says, like, see page 20. This thing starts on page 207. It's very posh what happened. What happened was that. Some number of years ago, David Rosenblum and Leora Zak got married, and they commissioned Art Scroll. They probably got married around Tu B'Av or on Tu B'Av. They commissioned Art Scroll to put out a pamphlet about Tu B'Av.
Mm-hmm.
Once they put in the work and they did it, they said, let's put this into the back of the Tisha B'Av edition. They just forgot to go back and change everything there. So... in the later editions, obviously, they took it out. But I wrote to Art Scroll about it, and I don't know, the person wrote back, like, who are these people? Are they married? Like, they were very confused. I'm not sure. I guess I wrote to the wrong person. But I think since then, they corrected it. Overall, I have to say that I think Art Scroll has fewer mistakes than most places, because I think more editing goes on at Art Scroll than other places. Like, everything gets read many times. I saw, for example, when I was learning brachos in, I was doing for a while a shiur at AA. So at AA, everybody came with their various translations. So it's actually a quotation of a Mishnah in Brachos. It says there, Hakok shared licorice as a Megillah, chutz micher shayt of a katan. Everybody is kosher to read Megillah except cher shayt of a katan. So I asked everybody there, how does your Gemara translate the word cherish? How do you translate cherish?
That's a death mute.
Right. So the Mishnah in Truma, I think it's in Truma, says that cherish and mechal makim is deaf mute, with a couple of exceptions. This is one of them. Why? It says everybody's kosher to read the Megillah except cherish. What does that mean? It means the Gemara explains there that Tana holds that you have to be mashmiel oznav, and if you don't do it, you're not yoytze. So if a cherish reads the Megillah and I hear him, I'm not yoytze. Why? Because he can't hear what he's saying. But he read the Megillah. And he's obviously not deaf mute.
He's not a mute.
Right? He's not mute. So Art Scroll correctly, in that case, translates the word as deaf. In the Koren Steinsaltz edition, they say deaf mute, which is an error. It's talking about a case where he read the Megillah. So, because one of the guys at the shir, he said, no, mine says deaf mute. I told him yours is wrong and the Art Scroll is right. So people don't like to hear it, because people, like a lot of people, consider the Art Scroll as the more yeshivish one, so they have to be wrong and the more scholarly guys have to be right. So I sent it also, Safaria, their Talmud, they have a few English translations. The default, at least at the time I checked, their default English text was reproduced from the Koran edition. So they have like an easy, like, send corrections. So I sent them correction. I didn't have any contacts at Koren or at Steinsaltz, and they changed it. They acknowledged it was a mistake. But first they told me they don't change the translation because it's not their translation. It's the Steinsaltz's translation. But clearly somebody reached out to Steinsaltz, they acknowledged it was a mistake, and they changed it, and to this day, Safaria now has deaf instead of deaf mute. I was curious on the print edition of the Steinsaltz, are they changing it? So I emailed them. Never heard from them. People don't like to hear about it. They're not interested. But it's funny, Safaria, I think I once quoted here, no? Safaria has one of the worst translations I've ever seen. But it's not their fault. I think it was crowdsourced. Remember that? Yeah, I mentioned it. Shulchan Aruch says that if a person sells meat, a sheikhit, this is tabach, it means somebody who chefs and produces meat for commercial use, and he sells meat and they find there's still chelev in the meat, which means they didn't do the nikur contravering correctly. So it says in Yardaya, in Kuf Yates, misalkanoisai. What does misalkanoisai mean? He has to be fired from his position. So the Safaria translation of the Shulchan Aruch says they stone him. Hey, somebody obviously get confused between Salika, Siluk, and Skila.
Wow.
So I sent it to them. I wrote to them. I used to correct everything I found in Safari until I realized that it's like, you know, it's like trying to empty the ocean with a spoon. At some point you give up. But I told them this is not a mistake. It's an embarrassing mistake. Like, you should stop. Because what they were doing was they were doing a translation that anybody could, like a wiki thing. What's it called? Crowdsource translation. Anybody could contribute to, and it was Kol HaMaisif Reizeg HaRei. It was an awful translation. It was full of mistakes. It was terrible. There's no, you can't fix it.
You know what I found? Chabad has a Chumash Rashi.
Yeah. The one they have here with the orange cover?
No, online.
Oh, online.
Because what I do is, when I have people eating by me Shabbos, I try to print out whatever I'm going to talk about.
That's very smart. Yeah.
Chumash Rashi with the translation. So whether it's the great translation, it doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Because I tried this scenario and I found that there's too many issues.
Yeah. When it came to, I noticed the Rambam. I learned Rambam with some guys.
Because who else has it?
Yeah. The texts are pretty accurate. They have some mistakes just because nobody sits there typing it. They probably import it from somewhere. Translation, I once was learning Rambam, just like you, was learning Rambam, and I realized the guys there didn't really read Hebrew. So I told everyone to take out their phones and go to Safaria, and the translation was very clunky. So we tried Chabad. Chabad has a very good Rambam.
Rambam?
Yeah.
I don't know how many different forms they have.
Yeah. Chabad has Rashi online. They have Rambam.
On the Chumash, I realized if you click on the page, it says you want to see Rashi also, then you get the Rashi. And you click again, and it takes it away.
It's well done. Yeah, there's something, you know, there's a little bit of a, there was a little bit of a, I don't know what the right word is, a little bit of a dust-up online. Or not, it was really offline probably, but I saw it online, about whether Safaria should be considered puzzle, because they do have objectionable material.
They're bringing in.
Yeah, a lot of Israel. Question is whether to use the other stuff is not objectionable. Like, so for example, like they have a really nice interface where you could pull up a passage of Gemara, and it'll link you to commentaries on it. I use it with my Chavruso when we learn Agadah Gemara. I always want to see if there's Ben Yoyada on this piece, any given piece, because I just find Ben Yoyada is like one after another, Gishmaka stuff. Like, I find them really enjoyable to learn. So we use that. Maybe I should really buy a print version. Maybe Nisr Chalas or something. I'm not sure.
So why is it different than the computer? You have a computer. There are things on there that are less than desirable. So what's the answer? Same thing as Rebbei and Acha. Right? He said So over here also.
Yeah.
As long as your eyes are open and you know that it is what it is. They have good translations, and then they have whatever female rabbis were writing and whatever it is. But someone wrote about it recently, I guess someone involved it. He said, look, we started off this way and we're trying to appeal to a broad spectrum.
Yeah.
That's their attitude. So, you know, it's like Manischewitz gefilte fish. They're trying to appeal to anyone who's culturally Jewish.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than Manischewitz gefilte fish. In other words, if this is more like if Manischewitz would make kosher gefilte fish and also treif gefilte fish, and say, look, some people want treif gefilte fish, so we have to cater to them. And if they wouldn't eat treif gefilte fish from Manischewitz, maybe they'd eat Burger King, which is worse, or, you know, that sort of thing. So it's not...
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know the answer.
If you go into it with your eyes open...
They're not too open.
Huh?
Not too open.
The Oitzer HaChachma, these places, they don't have English translations.
Oitzer HaChachma has a small handful of English works, but not that many. Not sure who else has. Art Scroll has an app, but it's not free. I don't blame them. They have a huge staff. Yeah. So... They have a good system because first somebody pays for it and then they sell it. They're dedicated, whatever it is. They have there's some clever legal. I don't know exactly how. Somehow it's a combination of a non-for-profit and a. Somebody explained it once, right?
Someone.
What?
I think the Rabbi Zlotowitz was there now. I think he was.
Rabbi Gedalia Zlotowitz.
It's very good.
There's a foundation that.
Yeah. Oh, you know how it works?
Yeah. I think so. They had this fellow who was a professor down south at some college. So the issue is this: if you're Random House, and they come to you and say, okay, we want you to write a book on something or other, and they have to pay you for it. They don't know if it's going to sell or not. So how do they do that? It's a problem. So looking for donors, right? It's a problem. So over here, they set up a foundation. The foundation is allowed to get donations and get a receipt for a donation. And then the foundation pays the scholars.
Uh-huh.
That's it. Yeah. They could have done it through a shul. They could have done the same thing, you know? Or whatever. Go through Bikachayla. It's
interesting.
Huh?
They do. They pay a lot of minyachim to sit and learn.
But the truth,
I mean,
the truth,
I write things.
The truth of the matter is, though, that if you're going to sit and translate a Masechta, how much time is involved and how much do you have to pay? And can you get your money out of it?
It's thousands of hours. It will not pay for itself.
Huh?
Yeah, to do a good job, and I think Art Scroll did a good job. Even Mark Shapiro, who loves to hate Art Scroll. He's a writer and professor who I do think he's Orthodox. He's certainly Shomer Shabbos, but I don't know how to describe him exactly.
But the bottom line is,
anyway, he likes the Art Scroll Gemara. He hates Art Scroll. He hates black Jews, but he likes the Gemara.
I don't know.
Gemara is a great job, I think.
How many? How many brachas Gemaras did they sell?
I'd love to know the numbers.
What?
I'd love to know the numbers.
Let's say 100,000.
Let's say.
How much profit did he make on it?
Let's think.
I don't know.
What?
But I don't know. But you know what the truth is? The truth is that when they first conceived the idea, they probably never thought they would sell that many.
No.
And therefore, there was no way to make it back. I know in the music business, not today. Today there was no music business. But years ago, I was wrong about people who were going to make a CD or a tape. It was practically impossible to make a profit because it cost so much.
Yeah, unless
hire
you sell
musicians and the studio.
Only
the
top people.
Well,
the same
thing
with publishing.
You know what they? What people did it just to get their names.
Get their names. They could do right concerts and
so here
gigs.
Also. Didn't your father also? It wasn't he involved with some of the translations?
My father wrote two of the Art Scroll volumes. Oh, by the way, speaking of mistakes.
Which two was it?
I think he wrote Bea and one of the volumes of Erevin, which was early on. Macus was first. So, literally the night before it went to print, Rabbi Sherman, Rabbi Zlatowitz said, come, let's proofread the thing.
Yeah.
Proofread. Like, we've already spent thousands of hours. And it's tens of thousands of words. What are we going to... How much can we do now? Let's put in some effort, right? Ishtadlus. So they found, actually, in the preface to the section on Tchum, it said that on Shabbos, you can't walk more than 2,000 Tfachim. Which was a mistake, right? And they changed it to Amos. Mamish, right before it went to print.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a dream. There was no way... You can pay
someone. They didn't know that
you could pay someone because you have to pay a living wage. There's no way you can pay someone all that much money. All right. So much for that. Usually he sends me a message if he's not going to come.
Who do you usually learn with?
Yehuda.
Oh, Yehuda. Yeah.